So good evening, everyone. So for those of you who haven't met yet, I'm Linda. I'm the program assistant. Main role is to try to help things run smoothly. So there is a handout at each class for the most part. The first one is all about this module, and this is the first class of this next module called The Spiritual Teacher. And so feel free to pick one of those up. It does have the readings and other things that you can follow along with. You can keep track of that on the back. And so there's space on the back so you can keep track of what you're doing. And I would say go ahead and keep track of it. Even if you're not working towards the certificate, you never know. Things may change. So it might be handy to have that information and what you have done to put towards that. So be sure to pick one of those up. On that, there are some online readings that are listed here. Those can be found through our website. Below that are the books. Those are optional, not required for this particular module. And it doesn't say optional, so those are optional. As you head on down in the box, that explains how you can find those online resources. And then below that, it explains how you can watch a class if you are not able to make it to a class. So you can either stream live from home or go back and listen to the class later. And then my contact is at the very, very bottom. If you have questions or need something, feel free to email. Again, the back has the information where you can kind of keep track of what you're doing. And then below that, there's information about how to give, because the Kadampa Center doesn't charge anything for any of the classes, which is pretty phenomenal. So there's lots of different ways to give. We have boxes throughout the center, just outside the door here and in the lobby as well. And then other ways to give is on the sheet. So let me know if you have any questions about that. I will also say that if we can all check our cell phones at this point and make sure they're on silence or at least vibrate, so to turn off those sounds. Let's see here. There is child care. Consulting my list here. So there is child care if you would like to bring a child. We have teens, Kadampa Center teens, hanging out in the preschool room there with the kids. So feel free to bring them if that helps you come to class. And I think that that's probably it. Does anyone have any questions for me before we get started? All right, then I'm going to turn it over to Robbie. Thanks.
Testing. Okay. Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Discovering Buddhism, the module on relating to the spiritual teacher. My name is Robbie Watkins. I've been a student of Tibetan Buddhism since approximately 1980. I've been a member of Kadampa Center since 1993. I've been a Discovering Buddhism teacher for about 15 years, as long as we've been putting this series of classes on, but I think this is the first time I've ever taught this module, or at least I have no memory of having taught it before, and I couldn't find anything in my computer that indicated I had taught it before, so we'll be exploring this subject together. Just so I can get a sense of who's here, we have a small summertime group here for our summer Dharma camp, but high quality, I'm sure. Do we have anyone who's here for the very first time tonight at Kadampa Center? Okay, that's fine. Glad to have you here. And who's taking their first Discovering Buddhism module tonight? Okay, glad to have you here. And how many people were in the last module was the path, right? Yeah, presenting the path. How many people are in that? Okay, fair number. And how many people here have a daily meditation practice? Okay, good number, great. As I said, the subject of this module. And we're set for 5 weeks, but I was just saying to Linda, since we have a small group, we may get through the material quicker, and it may be whittled down to 4 weeks, but we'll see how that goes. We'll assume it's going to be 5 weeks, but there's a chance of doing it in 4 weeks. The subject is relating to the spiritual teacher. In the traditional Tibetan model of the Lamrim, sometimes the relating to the spiritual teacher is placed right at the very beginning. Sometimes it's placed at the very end. And so apparently we decided to split the difference and stick it somewhere in the middle. I didn't come up with the order of the modules around this time, but I think we can make sense out of it. Just for people who are fairly new, I just wanted to introduce, this is Kadampa Center. We practice Buddhism in the Tibetan tradition. There are all sorts of different types of Buddhism. There's Japanese or Zen Buddhism. There's Chinese Buddhism. There's the Buddhism of Southeastern Asia. The tradition we're in is Tibetan. All of these traditions trace themselves back to the historical Buddha, who lived 2,500 years ago in northern India, kind of in the border area between India and Nepal. And he lived and taught there and died, and his teachings were written down generally, most of them within 100 years after he died, and then dispersed out throughout Asia. And as it entered into each country, it took on a strong cultural influence of that country. So, and now it's starting to come to the West from the original Asian traditions. I'm sure it'll change as it takes hold here, but since we practice in the Tibetan tradition, you'll notice a lot of trappings that are indicative of the Tibetan culture and the Tibetan traditions, as I always say. For the average Tibetan, this is a very plain, bare-looking temple. You know, it can't be gaudy enough as far as the Tibetans are concerned. The more color and lights and everything, the better. Very different from the Zen approach, which appearance-wise is much more austere. Kadampa Center is part of a worldwide organization called the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition, which is a real mouthful, so we abbreviate it as the FPMT. There are approximately 170 FPMT centers around the world, North and South America, Australia, Europe, and throughout Asia. We look to His Holiness the Dalai Lama, whose picture is behind the statue there, as our ultimate spiritual guide. But the spiritual director of our organization is Lama Zopa Rinpoche, whose picture is to the right of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And then to the left is Lama Yeshe, who founded the organization, and he died in the 1980s. We're fortunate to have two resident teachers here, Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sampo, who are fully qualified teachers and have completed the complete course of studies in the Tibetan monastic tradition. That's just a little bit about the center. We have a lot of events. Please look at our website. Look at the folders out front. There's all sorts of things going on. This course is called Discovering Buddhism. It's a set of 13 modules. Takes us 2 years to go through it, and each individual module is 5 to 6 weeks, as you know. We'll start, I'm good about starting on time at 7 o'clock, and we'll finish at 8:30. There'll be some homework each week that you need to do if you're taking the course for credit and want a certificate at the end. We'll be doing a lot of meditation, and there'll be time for question and answers almost every week, maybe not tonight, but the following weeks there'll be plenty of times for questions and discussions. I ask that you get here on time. If you need to use the bathroom at some point, that's fine to go out and go out through the back. The bathrooms are around to the left when you go outside the door. We'll be giving out the handwork. I think that's it. Any logistical questions that either I or Linda didn't cover? Okay. This subject relating to the spiritual teacher is not an easy one necessarily, and it can be even controversial as we try and decide who's a valid spiritual teacher and what is the importance of having a spiritual teacher as we study the path. So we'll be exploring some interesting subjects. To start out, we're going to watch a video produced by the FPMT. I think that's ready to go, Brian. Okay, thank you. Let's see, Linda, you want to get the lights? Thank you. Turn that off. Thank you, Brian. That was wordy. There's a lot of verbiage in there. Most of the people who are speaking are practicing at quite an advanced level, may not be exactly where we are or where we're going. But I think the basic questions that we're going to be talking about in this course were touched on. Do I need a spiritual teacher? Who qualifies as a valid spiritual teacher? And how do I find a spiritual teacher if I don't have one? So those are, we'll bring it down to that level. So those are questions that I think all of us can address. In Buddhism, we talk about the path from our present state of unhappiness, confusion, dissatisfaction. And the Buddha, who lived 2,500 years ago, said that it is possible for each of us to achieve the state of enlightenment, which means the state of complete compassion for all living beings and complete wisdom, direct perception of reality. Those are the two aspects of enlightenment, compassion and wisdom. And the Buddha said we can achieve that simply by working with our mind. Okay, and that's what he did as a human being. We don't become a god. The Buddha was not a god. He was a human being who lived 2,500 years ago. And the question is, do we need a spiritual teacher to help us to make that transformation? If we can do it on our own, that's fine. But most of us find that we do need at least advice somewhere along the path. So that's what we'll be looking at over the next couple weeks. And in all of these modules, we talk a lot about meditation. That's an important part of the path, studying and meditation. So I wanted to start off this evening by doing some meditation. Meditation is not unique to the Buddhist path, but the Buddhists are considered kind of the experts, but it's used in many other spiritual traditions. Does anybody know what the Tibetan word for meditation is? Anybody picked that up so far? It's three letters. Gom. Okay? That's meditation in Tibetan Buddhism. And so this room that we're in is called a gompa, a room for meditation. And does anybody know what the definition of meditation is? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Into the mic for okay. The thousands of people who are watching us on the web.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's working with the mind?
It's working with the mind, but there's a more specific function.
Is it to become familiar with?
Yes. Meditation is becoming familiar with a chosen object, okay, or a chosen subject. So it's not spacing out. It's not going blank. It's not emptying your mind of all thoughts from the, in the Tibetan model of the mind, that's an impossibility. You know, we can't have a mind that has no thoughts in it. There's always something in it. So it's becoming familiar with, specifically in the Buddhist tradition, becoming familiar with virtuous qualities of mind like patience, love, compassion, generosity, understanding. Okay, by becoming familiar with them, our mind takes on those qualities itself. So we actually change our mind by becoming familiar with virtuous qualities. Now we can sit and meditate on anger, jealousy, resentment, and we're pretty good at meditating on those. We can keep those thoughts in our mind pretty well. We've developed the real ability to concentrate on those. And we notice if we do that, that becomes a habitual way of thinking. So in the Buddhist tradition, we stop that kind of meditation and we meditate on more virtuous qualities. So our mind takes on those characteristics, and the Buddha says that makes you happy. Okay, by developing your mind, you create your own happiness. So that's what meditation is about in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. So we're going to start with a very simple meditation tonight, just a simple concentration meditation. And the first thing we do is we establish our posture. And you can either sit on a cushion on the floor or sit in a chair. If you're sitting in a chair, you may like to put a cushion under your feet if they don't reach all the way to the ground, so you're not stretching out. That's fine. But whether you're sitting on the floor or in a chair, have your back a little bit straighter than you normally sit. Okay? Not rigid, but a little bit, said to be a little bit more regal. Your head is straight on your shoulders, not tilted to one side or the other, maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical. Eyes can be either just very slightly opened, just letting a little light in, or very lightly closed. Our mouth is lightly closed also, with our tongue on the ridge of our gums above our upper teeth. So we're not sitting here drooling. That's not considered beneficial in the Tibetan tradition. Our shoulders are down, not up against our ears, but down and a little bit back, so our chest is open. We can either put a hand on each knee, or more typically, we put our right hand and our left hand with our thumbs touching. That again symbolizes wisdom and compassion, the two aspects of enlightenment. Our legs are in any position that we find comfortable and non-distracting. You don't have to torture yourself here. If you're sitting on a cushion, you can just put your knees on the floor. You can put one foot on the other leg, or you can do a full lotus if you find that comfortable. If you're sitting in a chair, you want your feet flat, either on the floor or on a cushion. The point of the posture is not to be uncomfortable or distracting. The point is to establish a posture that is stable and self-maintaining so that you can establish it at the beginning of the meditation and then you don't have to pay attention to it. So start at the top of your head and just scan yourself for any tension or discomfort. And address that now so it doesn't become an ongoing issue during the meditation to follow. And to help calm the mind, quiet all the distractions, all the thoughts, and bring our mind to the present. It's good to take a couple deep breaths from the abdomen with the stomach expanding on the in-breath so your diaphragm is pulled down. And just do that three times. and allow your breath to return to its normal pattern. And we always begin our meditation session by setting our motivation. What is my reason for doing this? And any motivation is a valid one. If it's just out of curiosity, that's fine. If we want to do it just to calm down and relax a little bit after a busy day, that's great. But it's said that the highest, the most powerful motivation, the one that allows us to make the most dramatic changes for the better in our mind, is what's referred to as the bodhicitta motivation. And we'll talk about this more over the next few weeks. Bodhicitta being the wish to become enlightened so that I can be of benefit to all living beings without exception. Not just my friends and the people I like, not just myself, but everyone. So that I'm doing something as simple as this meditation for the next couple minutes, so that I can become enlightened for that purpose. So sit for just a minute and see if you can get a taste of that motivation. So having set our motivation, we begin the actual meditation, and we're going to do just a simple concentration meditation, just placing our consciousness, our mind, our awareness on the movement of the breath in and out through the opening of our nostrils. Nothing more. Nothing less than that. Direct perception of the movement of air in and out through our nostrils. We're not visualizing it. We're not describing it to ourselves. Just direct perception of the physical sensation of the movement of the breath. And every time we notice that our awareness has left the breath and gone to a memory or a physical sensation or thought of something we need to do when we leave the center tonight, we set that other perception aside and come back to the breath. Over and over and over again. Gently bringing the mind back to the breath. Every time the mind wanders off to something else, gently bring it back. That's the meditation. And we always end our meditation session with a dedication. We begin with a motivation, we end with a dedication. We acknowledge that we've done something a little bit out of the ordinary, something that's made a positive imprint, however small, on our mind stream. And we think, may that positive energy not be lost, but may it ripen in the future in a way that benefits all living beings. Okay. Any questions about that meditation? That's a simple concentration meditation. We can't get to enlightenment just by watching our breath. That's not adequate. But being able to concentrate is a necessary tool on the path. And concentration in and of itself is considered a virtuous state of mind, i.e. one that produces happiness within ourselves. So the ability to concentrate, and you hear these stories about these great meditators who can put their mind on a single object for 7 minutes or 15 minutes and it never leaves it, is said to be an incredibly blissful state. And it's something that we can develop on our own in our meditation practice. Any questions about that meditation? Okay, wait for the mic. Yeah, we like to use the mic. Yeah. How many people throughout the world are watching, Brian?
Six.
Six? Whoa, good. That's great. Okay.
you said we're going to virtuous qualities.
Virtuous qualities, yeah.
But when I meditate, I go into these negative places.
Yeah. I mean, that's, Venerable Rabina has said several times that becoming enlightened is just about developing new habits. And we have habitual ways of thinking that we fall into very easily, and they're not necessarily real pretty. So it's not easy. It doesn't happen right like that. Okay, so we'll see a lot of junk and a lot of really unpleasant stuff come up. Yeah, it's not like we can just sit and it's all peace and love, right away. Yeah, so give yourself, be patient with yourself, okay? Yeah, good comment, though. Yeah, when we sit and meditate, it's amazing what kind of garbage will come up. Yeah, so don't be surprised. Okay, tonight I just wanted, you heard a lot of words in that video, and I wanted to talk about some of them, because if we're not using these words accurately, we may be talking around each other and not communicating very well. So there, first thing let me say, everything in the Buddhist path is presented as something that you should take and test against your own experience. Don't take anything on just blind faith. Anything that I say, anything that Geshe Gelug says when he's teaching here, anything that you heard in the video or that you read in the books, test it out. And particularly when we're talking about spiritual teachers, you have to use your native intelligence. There are a lot of false teachers. There are a lot of charlatans. There are people like Jim Jones in Jonestown who present themselves as spiritual teachers. And ultimately, it is up to you to decide for yourself if this is valid, if this is a valid teacher. So don't ever throw away that. Don't think you have to accept anything that's being said here ever at Kadampa Center, that you have to swallow the whole thing. Take what you find useful, what you find true, what chimes with your own experience. So there are some words that you heard. One of them was guru. One of them was lama. Other words that you may have heard are tulku. That, I don't think that was in the video tonight, but you hear that one a lot. Rinpoche, that one came up a lot. Another one you hear, Geshe. Another one that goes along with Geshe is Kenpo, K-E-N-P-O. Okay. Yeah, I think those are the ones we want to talk about tonight. Okay, guru is a Sanskrit word, the language of ancient India. Someone in the video gave the exact definition of the word guru. Did anybody pick up on it? Right near the beginning, yeah, because it's not something we talk about a lot. But you notice, lots of times when they take a word like this, they'll break it down into syllables or even into letters and say, this syllable means this and this syllable means that. So in the word guru, The first syllable is, let's see, I had this written down somewhere. It's short for, and you don't need to write this down, this is getting a little obscure, Guya. And the second syllable is short for Rupa. Anybody know what Rupa means? That's a word you may have heard.
Body.
It means body, okay? And this means collection. Guru, the actual meaning of guru is heavy with good qualities. A guru is someone who is heavy with good qualities. It doesn't mean they're fat or they're heavy and like they're serious, but it means they embody many virtuous qualities, okay, the ones we've talked about, love, compassion, generosity, and especially bodhicitta, which we talked about during the meditation, which is the aspiration to become enlightened for the benefit of all living beings. So a guru, and that's a word, you know, is kind of debased in the West. It's used sarcastically a lot or used for comic effect, but it means someone who is heavy, who is a collection of good qualities, someone who embodies all the possible good qualities that we aspire to ourselves. Okay? So that's the Sanskrit word. Lama is Tibetan. Okay? And it is basically the Tibetan equivalent of guru. Okay? It means this has the same implications. La refers to specifically to bodhicitta, as we talked about. Anybody know what ma means in Tibetan? This is real easy. Ma means mom. Yeah, it means mother. Yes. Okay. It means someone who has given birth to all the good qualities within themselves, specifically to bodhicitta and an understanding of emptiness. This word also represents bodhicitta being the compassion aspect of enlightenment, which is considered to be male, and the female or mother aspect is considered to be wisdom. Okay, so the combination of the two is enlightenment. Okay, so lama is someone who embodies both wisdom and compassion. And these are very loosely used term. There's no official certification process that you go through in Tibet to get the designation of lama or guru. These are terms that are basically used by students to refer to their teachers, okay? Lama Zopa, the spiritual head of the FPMT, his picture's up here, he's referred to as Lama Zopa. Zopa's his given name. Lama is an honorific term that his students use to refer to him, okay? Lama is the Tibetan word. Guru is the Sanskrit word. Okay. So basically both of these are referring, can be said to refer to a highly qualified spiritual teacher, someone who embodies the qualities that you aspire to and who can explain the methods of attaining them to you. Okay? But they're very loosely used terms, and you'll see them used a lot. Okay. Does anybody know what a... clear up what may be a confusion if you hang out in Buddhist circles. Does anybody know the four Tibetan traditions? The four traditions. No, not the Four Noble Truths. The four practicing traditions. Yeah, there's Gelupa, the yellow hat, which is what His Holiness the Dalai Lama always comes from the Galupa tradition. Kadampa Center is in the Galupa tradition. These are like denominations. If Tibetan Buddhism is comparable to Christianity, these four traditions are different denominations. There's Galupa, Sakya, Nyingma, and Kagyu. Okay, just so you're familiar with those terms. They all have their own spiritual leaders, but they all, to a certain degree, look to His Holiness the Dalai Lama as the ultimate spiritual guide for all Tibetan Buddhists. In some of those traditions, they put a lot of emphasis on doing a 3-year meditation retreat. And it's very common for even Westerners to do this, to go into meditation for 3 years. And when they come out of that, they're said to be meditation lamas, or you'll hear those people referred to as lamas, and they're just, you know, ordinary Westerners like us who have done a 3-year retreat, so they're not that ordinary. They've done something very special. But the lama, when it's used in that sense, doesn't have the implication of a fully qualified spiritual teacher. So you'll see a lot of people referred to as lama in that sense, who are not lamas like Lama Zopa Rinpoche. So that gets confusing. And then also, anyone who's studied in the tantric schools in Tibet or in the monasteries in India is considered a lama also. But again, it's a different sense of lama. So I just wanted to confuse the issue and let you know, you may hear the word lama used in ways that don't necessarily correspond with heavy with all the good qualities. So it's a word that gets used a lot. Okay. Anybody know what a tulku is? Anybody heard that word before? Okay. A tulku is the recognized reincarnation of a meditation master. Okay. Oh, gurus and lamas don't have to be monks or nuns, okay? They can be lay people. Okay, like I say, there's no certified, you know, there can be great teachers who don't wear robes, okay? So that's an important point to remember. A tulku is a recognized reincarnation of a meditation master, someone who is a very high practitioner of certain tantric practices. For example, Lama Zopa Rinpoche has been recognized as the reincarnation of someone called the Laodo Lama. Laodo being this place at the end of the earth on the border between Nepal and Tibet. It's at like 14,000 feet and, you know, has a population of maybe 8 people. And there's a little cave there where the Laodo Lama, who I don't think was a monastic, but don't quote me on that, practiced in this cave for many, many years. And then several years after his death, the very young Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who grew up in that minuscule village, was recognized. You know, he kept, Venerable Rabina talked about this when he was little. He kept trying to run away from everyone and go up the hill to this cave, and they'd find him asleep in the cave and all this stuff. So he was he's been recognized as the reincarnation of the Laodo Lama, and Venerable Rabina, who was here, takes a pilgrimage to that area every year or so. It's pretty arduous. Yeah, you know, it's not, there's not a Four Seasons hotel in Laodo yet. But anyway, a tulku, the actual first tulku is a great meditation master who has achieved a degree of control over his mind that he can choose his rebirth, unlike most of us who just are thrown into our next rebirth, who chooses his own rebirth, sees that coming back in the, as the reincarnation, as a recognized reincarnation would be beneficial, and is recognized as such. And so there's a, typically it goes from lifetime to lifetime to lifetime. His Holiness the Dalai Lama is considered a tulku, in that the all the Dalai Lamas are said to be reincarnations of Avalokiteshvara, or chin-raising, a compassion aspect of enlightenment. Okay? And what happens typically is when the students of the deceased meditation master, who somehow, and this is very complicated, think that he may have been reincarnated, they go to a great teacher and ask him to help them look for the reincarnation of their teacher. Sometimes they find him, sometimes they don't find him. And throughout the centuries, of course, there's incredible opportunity for corruption and chicanery and utilizing this process for non-spiritual aims. But that's what a tulku is. Tulkus are frequently referred to as Rinpoche, and that Lama Zopa is referred to as Rinpoche, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, or within the FPMT people just say Rinpoche. Anybody know what Rinpoche means? It means precious one, okay? So a tulku is referred to also as a Rinpoche, okay? Now, there are Rinpoches who are not tulkus, but all tulkus are Rinpoches. You can call other people precious if they merit it, but generally when you call someone a Rinpoche, you're talking about a tulku, someone who's been recognized as the reincarnation of a previous great meditation master. Now, they were a meditation master, but doesn't mean they were necessarily a great teacher. They were not a Buddha. They had not necessarily developed all the qualifications of wisdom and compassion, but they had practiced certain levels of high meditation that they could achieve things like being reborn intentionally. So tulku is not a Buddha. He may not even be a good teacher. He may be a jerk in this lifetime, okay? And there is a period in medieval Tibet where the aim of the tulkus, the recognized tulkus, again, this is how it became quite corrupt, was to acquire as much money and property and houses and things as possible. So tulkus became somewhat, the whole thing became quite degenerate before Lama Tsongkhapa came in and kicked butt and reformed things. This is Lama Tsongkhapa here, and he's not a tulku. He never reincarnated in a form that we've discovered, okay? There's not a lineage of Lama Tsongkhapa as a reincarnation. We don't see reincarnated Lama Tsongkhapas running around. But lots of the Tibetan teachers within the 20th century, even the great lamas, have their reincarnations have been recognized. You know, check it out for yourself and see what you think. But these are terms that you hear. Tulku and Rinpoche. Okay. Geshe. That's a term you hear a lot. We have two teachers here. One's Geshe Gelug, the other's Geshe Sampo. Anybody know what Geshe means?
Teacher.
Hmm?
Teacher.
No, it doesn't mean a teacher necessarily. You're close. It's a degree, yeah. It's an academic degree. It's someone who's completed basically the 20-year study program in the Tibetan monasteries. Okay, Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sampo did it at one of the monasteries that's reestablished in southern India. So they have the academic degree. It's like a PhD of Tibetan monasticism. They have been awarded the Geshe degree. So it's really an academic degree. You go to these monasteries in South India, and there may be 5,000 or 6,000 monks. Okay, most of them are going to be growing the vegetables, they're going to be running the kitchen, they're going to be doing the electrical power. There's only a very small group, and I can't say how many out of 5,000 or 10,000 become Geshes, but it's a whole city that exists for the purpose of supporting those who have the qualities and are allowed to pursue the Geshe degree. Okay, Geshe Gelug went above and beyond that, and he got another degree called a Lurumpa Geshe, which is an even higher degree, some whatever's beyond a PhD. Geshe Sampo went to Tantric College and studied ritual, so he does a lot of teachings on ritual here. So these are academic degrees. Kenpo is the same as a Geshe degree in some of the other traditions, Kagyu and Nyingma, I think. I'm not sure, though. So these are academic degrees. These are related to reincarnation. These are related to the qualities that we would look for in a teacher. So how do you sum it all up? It's a lot of words, and then there's one phrase that I think really sums up all these qualities of what we're looking for in a spiritual teacher, and that's called, the phrase is, spiritual friend. And that's in the actual name of a lot of Tibetan texts. Rather than guru or lama, they talk about our spiritual friend, which really gives a better sense of what we're looking for than some of these other words. We're looking for a spiritual friend. Now, it's not a spiritual buddy, okay? It's not a spiritual pal. And it's not a perfectly even two-way street. I don't think, you know, His Holiness the Dalai Lama may be your spiritual friend, but I don't know if he'd consider you his spiritual friend, in that you probably don't embody all the virtuous qualities that he aspires to, or if you're like me, okay? But a spiritual friend, someone who guides us, who protects us, who looks out for our best interest, this is, to me, really the phrase that embodies what we're talking about in this class when we're talking about a spiritual teacher. Okay, it doesn't necessarily mean all the... You saw a lot of people who were just extremely devoted. That's not a requirement to have that level of devotion. But having a spiritual friend, someone who can guide you on the path, who understands how your mind works and what your aspirations are, is what we're talking about in this class. Okay? Any questions or comments on anything I've said? Yeah, if we can pass the mic there.
I was wondering what the difference between Geshe and Geshe-la is.
La is the same word in Lama, okay? It's an affectionate term that we add to it. Geshe-la, okay? It means someone with the academic degree who embodies these virtuous qualities, particularly compassion. So you can add it to anybody's name, okay? We could say Linda La. You know, it's just a way of saying dear in a way. Yeah. Good question. Any other questions or comments? Yeah, Chrissy.
So most of the nuns we refer to as venerable.
Mm-hmm.
But is that just an affectionate term, or is that an earned, like, merit?
Venerable
term?
Is anyone who's taken vows, wears robes, is referred to as a venerable. Good question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the monks and nuns are referred to as venerable. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to get very informal with them, but I think I try and remember to refer to them not as Kondo, but Venerable Kondo, or, you know, this, add the venerable. It's a gesture of respect for the commitment they've made. Okay. They're monks and nuns. They're just like us. You know, they're not holy beings or anything, but they're people who've chosen to follow that path on their spiritual progress. Yeah.
So then the Dalai Lama could be something like Venerable Geshe Dalai Lama.
Yes, Rinpoche. Yes. I think he qualifies for all of them. Yeah. Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah. As he says, he's just a simple monk. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but he did go through the complete course of monastic studies, and then you have to pass an exam at the end and do debates and everything. So it's quite arduous, and you start when you're quite young, as we know from Geshe-la. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Okay, I think that. Okay. Oh, okay. This is kind of an interesting thing. When we do the phrase spiritual friend, the phrase spiritual has the aspect of constructive or positive. Okay, it's a positive friend who has a constructive or positive effect on you. And it's said that in the presence of this friend, we are, and they literally use this word, ashamed, to act in a non-virtuous way. We don't want to be angry or jealous or selfish in front of them, okay? So that we will. We certainly can't be perfect now. But in that's very interesting, because in that type of ashamed is considered a very positive mental state and positive mental factor, that not wanting to demonstrate negative mind states in front of your friend or your teacher. They kind of lift your game. Your game rises to their level, so to speak. And that's said to come. The word, it's translated shame. There's probably some sort of subtle difference, but it's said that's a positive type of shame, that we don't want to demonstrate negative qualities in front of our spiritual friends or our teachers. And let's see, what else did I write down here? Yeah, I think that's everything. Any other questions or comments? Was that helpful, getting some of those words out that you hear a lot? Because that's really what we'll be talking about. But I think, you know, spiritual friend is really the one that sums it up for me with all that, with all its qualities. Yeah, that means that's kind of the juiciest term. Okay, so that is it for tonight. Your homework for the week is to, if you don't have one already, find a spot in your home where you can meditate every day. Okay, it's said that it's good for it to be, you know, pick a designated spot. Just don't try to do it on the fly while you're driving down I-40 or something. But have a spot in your home where the other people in your house, and this includes your pets also, know that this is your private time. You go, you sit there, it should be neat. Have a positive imprint on your mind. If you wish, you can set up a little altar in front of you with a picture of someone who you look to as a spiritual example, or put a flower on it or a candle. So find your meditation spot that you'll use for the rest of this month. Sit in meditation 5 days out of the week, 10 minutes, just doing the very simple concentration meditation, with a motivation and a dedication. And then I want you to think about skills that you've mastered in this lifetime. You know, maybe cooking, playing the piano, speaking Italian, whatever, you know, running a 4-minute mile. Did you have teachers for that? Or did you do some of it on your own? And by teachers, it can be, you know, somebody on YouTube or something in a book. What were you able to do with teachers? What could you do without teachers? And there's no right or wrong answer. Just start to look at the role that teachers have played in our lives. You know, it's that, you know, can a Buddha come down and take away all our suffering? Take away all our problems? Does a Buddha have that ability? What power does a Buddha have? As a completely enlightened being, they can teach. They can't fix us, okay? All they can do is teach us. That's the greatest power a Buddha has. So think about teachers that we've had in this lifetime and how they've helped us. And see you next week. Okay? Yeah, okay.
Oh, I was just going to make one suggestion, because when I had a family and at home and it was busy and dogs,
yeah,
and all that stuff, I created my little garden tub because I never use it. And I made that my little meditation spot. The garden tub.
Uh-huh.
If you have like a tub that just sits there and never gets used.
Yeah.
That's my meditation spot.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Okay.
And homework is outside the door, the Gompa door here. You can pick it up on your way out.
Now, is there going to be discussion afterwards or?
Not tonight.
Not tonight. Okay. But there may be in the future. We don't know.
Correct. I'm blanking on her name. Rachel? Karen, yes. Karen is not here tonight.
Okay.
She's usually
okay,
the
so
one
Karen's
that
here.
Stays and does that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, yeah. I think staying, yeah, most people have had a long day at work, so. Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
See you next week.